Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Our baseball insider from ESPN, Buster Olney, joins us. Buster, let's talk about the Red Hot Royals, winners of six in a row, and going today for the sweep of the Houston Astros.
Man, they are fun to watch. You know, every day when you have a menu of games you can choose from, I enjoy watching the Rangers, you know, defending champions. They're kind of one of my go-to teams. This weekend we got, you know, Dodgers and Padres on Sunday Night Baseball, so I'll watch them. But I've watched more Royals against the Astros in this series than any of the other games. What fun games. You know, like the other day, you know, Cole Reagan's going against the Astros lineup that has all this experience. And they did a good job of wearing him down and being patient, and yet he did a really good job on a day when, you know, he was battling his pitch count. He grinded through. He had three runs allowed in five innings, gave him a chance to win. They come back. Salvi gets the big hit. And then they come out yesterday and, you know, and obliterate him. And it is fun watching them play right now, and, you know, so much hope with where the team is.
What's been so interesting to watch is this starting rotation that still, as a whole, has an ERA under two. And you know how hard it is to build a rotation. But for the Royals, they seemingly have rebuilt a rotation in one offseason. You had the trade for Cole Reagans that happened last year. But I'm just talking about compared to what they had opening day last year. They didn't have Cole Reagans. They had to trade Chapman for him. Then you go out and sign Lugo and Waka. Right, you have Brady Singer, and then Alec Marsh, a guy that's had tremendous stuff but just hasn't put it together. He looks like he's starting to put it together, and he won the fifth starting spot. That's incredible. And again, we've been keeping told to qualify everything with it's early, but still, the dramatic change in just the rotation alone from what it was last offseason, and last season where 32 different pitchers started a game for the Royals, to this year where it looks like it's one of the deepest rotations in baseball.
Yeah, and that starts with, obviously, the Cole Reagans trade, right? I remember last year at times it felt like Brady Singer, you know, his starts where you'd almost couldn't wait for them to come around because that was your point of hope for the Royals. But now, as you mentioned, they have a lot of depth, and they have a guy at the front. They have an ace. You know, the other day I was talking with Dane Dunning of the Texas Rangers, who, of course, knows Cole really well. And he and I were, talking about, Reagan's ascension into, you know, the upper echelons of pitchers. And Dane talked about how cool it was that, you know, from their perspective, they saw talent. Like Dane, you know, played catch with him, was friends with him, is friends with him. And he talked about, you know, seeing him go over there and his velocity jump and him figuring out some things with his mechanics and putting it all together. And he couldn't have been more happy for him. And he talked about, you know, what a grounded person he is. And I think that's reflected when you see him on the mound in tough moments. He just seems so unflappable, you know, right? He kind of reminds me, and as Dane and I were talking, Jacob deGrom, you know, walked into the room, and we were talking about how personality-wise, Reagan does remind you of deGrom, where it always felt like deGrom relented nothing on the mound, where you never saw when the other team had runners on base, you never saw deGrom crack emotionally. And that's where Cole is. And I think when you get a guy like that, who's that talented at the front of your rotation, man, everything else just falls in place, just like with a bullpen. If you have a great closer, and you saw that for years with Wade Davis, if you have a great closer, a lot of the other guys fall in line behind him really naturally and gives them protection. And so to have him like that, boy, what a weapon for them going forward. And we are going to, you know, within a month, if he continues to pitch like this, we're going to have the question of whether or not he should start the All-Star game.
Now here's another trade that happened last year that we have been talking about quite a bit, and that was the Royals traded Jose Quas, who's now he's a 30-year-old reliever, considered like a six-inning guy, just a solid reliever, right? Traded to the Cubs for Nelson Velasquez. Once they get Velasquez, he hit He hit 14 home runs in 40 games for the Royals last year. And this year, so far, he's locked down the DH spot, and he has been on fire since day one. I saw some Cubs people tweeting out last night, like, this looks like a horrible trade. Why did we trade Velasquez for Kwas again? And that's just, you know, it doesn't get the headlines that Reagan's does, but they traded just, a guy in the bullpen for what looks like a good, cheap, young, controllable hitter that offers 30 home run power in that DH spot. That's a hell of a trade, too.
It is. I mean, when you consider, what they were dealing with last year, they actually, on paper, didn't have a lot to trade, right? You're not normally going to get a lot in return for a reliever like Chapman in his situation, or, as you say, sort of a fringy roster guy. But, I mean, to me, in watching them play, what Velasquez has really done is give them depth. I mean, it felt like in recent years, when you got past two or three hitters in the Royals lineup, like, you were scot-free, right? You weren't really that worried about the bottom of the lineup. But now it feels so much more circular. Like, okay, here comes, Salvi. Here comes Melendez. After you deal at the top of the lineup, with Garcia and with Bobby Witt Jr., there's so much depth to it. And to me, he's right in the middle of it. And, I don't think he's going to be a star, but he's a good major league hitter. That's pretty clear.
I want to go back to something you said just a second ago, Buster, because I don't know. We've already heard the comps and everything, but just getting my head around it. You said we're going to have to start talking about whether or not Cole Reagans should start the All-Star game. A Kansas City Royals pitcher.
I know. And think about this, too, okay? At the beginning of the calendar year, who was the number one pitcher on the planet? Widely considered. It'd be Gerrit Cole of the Yankees. Mm-hmm. Well, he got hurt. Who was the number two guy? Well, that would be Spencer Strider. Looks like if he hasn't already had Tommy John surgery, he's going to have it at some point. He broke down. On and on and on. So many. Shane Bieber has been a top 10 pitcher. He's down. Well, guess what? When we have that conversation about who's the best pitcher on the planet, you know what? Cole Reagans is in that conversation now. Because, and part of it is attrition. And I know it sounds crazy because his track record isn't as long. But the bottom line is, when you can draw the sort of praise that he is from, Brandon Hyde, the Orioles manager, Jim Palmer, their broadcaster, or the other day I was watching the Astros broadcast and they were just going on and on and on about how he was working through trouble. And he kept the Royals in the game even on a day when, he took a body blow in that first inning when he threw upwards of something in the range of 30, 35 pitches. It really catches your eye. And so, when we're, talking about a Zach Wheeler of the Phillies, who probably right now would be considered to be the best pitcher on the planet, Cole Reagans is right behind him.
So you bring up all these injuries, and I had a conversation with someone last night that is close to the situation and knows what the hell he's talking about. And he heard us talking about it on the show and wanted to just have a conversation with me off the air and give me his thoughts. And he said the idea that the pitch clock is to blame for these injuries, he said, is absolutely ridiculous. He laughed at it. And he said he's more concerned. He thinks a bigger deal, the increased spin rate of pitchers or trying to get that spin rate without the use of the sticky stuff, of the spider tack or whatever. And now, because they aren't able to use that, they're having to put even more torque and more stress on their arm and on their elbows. He said that's a huge factor. And he kept mentioning velocity over and over again, velocity.
Yep.
He talked about drive line and the weighted balls and how just their pitchers, organizations are too obsessed with velocity and pitchers are too obsessed with velocity to the point where they're just asking their arms now to do things they're just not capable of doing over the long haul. What do you think?
Yeah, and the spike in injuries began long before the advent of the pitch clock, which is why I thought when Tony Clark put out that statement ahead of the players' union last week, I thought it was so disingenuous. First off, he said, the players are unanimously opposed. He indicated in the statement you know, unanimous opposition to the pitch clock. That's just not true. I mean, and you know, and you guys can walk into a clubhouse and walk up to, you know, players privately and say, hey, what do you think about the pitch clock? The vast majority of them love the pitch clock because they get to be home a half hour sooner. They like the pace of the game. And the second thing is, Tony's a smart guy, and he understands that we have had so much information and so much data that's indicated that there are a lot of factors going on here. And the, you know, the number one is the chase for velocity within the sport by teams and by players, and the chase for maximum spin. And that's been going on. Think about this number. There were more pitchers on the IL in the year before the pitch clock than there was in the first year of the pitch clock. So I agree with whoever you talk to. Like the I also think that Major League Baseball needs to listen to some pitchers who believe that the pitch clock might contribute, and maybe that's 2% of the problem. Maybe it's 1%. Maybe it's 5%. But it's the thing that people cite all the time is the chase for velocity. Look, the NFL, you know, a decade, the last 15 years, they had a problem with quarterbacks getting hurt. What did they do? They made structural changes. They made rule changes. I think that's what's got to happen. And talking with executives around baseball this week, they believe that too. So many of them do. And you have to, and we've been talking about this on the show for a long time, they have to restore the preeminence of the starting pitchers. They have to build rules that incentivize managers, organizations to allow starting pitchers to stay in the game rather than have this series of drag racer relievers coming in, maxing out, redlining, and then breaking down. You know, when Lance Lynn was traded to the Dodgers last year, he's a guy who consistently threw in the seventh and eighth inning. The first message from the Dodgers was, look, throw as hard as you can for as long as you can, and then we'll come and get you. Well, you know, I think that that perspective, because it involves competitiveness, that's what teams are going to continue to do and pitchers are going to continue to do unless there's a structural change. Those two ideas, maybe do roster limits so that, you know, the number of relievers used, you know, managers just don't have access to many, forcing them to trust starting pitchers for a longer period of time. Or you go with Max Scherzer's double hook idea, which he told me about during the postseason last year, which is you tie the designated hitter use to the starting pitcher. When you take out the starting pitcher, a team loses the DH. But I think that restoring the preeminence of the starting pitcher for baseball would be great for the sport on so many different levels, and maybe would help contribute to, you know, helping pitchers keep healthy and getting the sport off the track of doing nothing but chasing velocity.
Buster Olney is our guest. Buster, before we let you go, Adam's listening to the show. He tweeted in this question. He has a screenshot of a tweet you had back in 2013. Do you have a crystal ball? What are you, Nostradamus? It says, Matt Holliday's son, future all-star. And then someone responded to you, a little early to say that, isn't it? And you responded, I've seen him hit. I'll stand by the tweet. Fast forward to 2024, he is by far the top prospect in all of baseball, and he has now made his major league debut with Baltimore. Are you sure you don't want to be a scout and go out and watch grade school kids and pick out which ones will be Hall of Famers?
All right, full disclosure, I think that anybody who saw Jackson Holliday, as the, you know, whether they saw him at 4, 5, 8, or 10, would look at him and say, yeah, that's a future star. And by the way, you guys and I have seen many sons of ball players, you know, Ryan Weathers, you know, Cody Clemens, who wanted to play in the big leagues. And so it's not uncommon for sons of big leaguers to reach the majors.
Bobby Witt Jr.
But right, exactly. But I got to tell you, like, among the many, many sons of major leaguers that I've seen, Anthony Gwynn, who I met, you know, at 11 years old, climbing around, who played 10 years in the big leagues, climbing around his dad's locker room, all of those guys, I'd never seen anybody who looked like Jackson Holliday did at a young age. And so I may have sent that tweet out. I think anybody who saw him play would have sent the tweet out and probably felt the same way because he just looks like he's a monster star. Look, this spring I've been polling general managers around the sport informally and asking them among you know, the questions, who's the best 23 and under player? And some of them have said Corbin Carroll. And some have said, you know, Julio Rodriguez of the Mariners. Some have said Gunnar Henderson, you know, Holiday teammate with the Orioles. Most of them are saying to me, it's Jackson Holiday, which tells you a lot about how good this guy is. You know, incredible combination of power and speed and that beautiful swing that I and others saw when he was 3, 4, 5 years old.
Buster, great stuff as always. Now, you know what? Go do some TV for us, will you?
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Buster. Buster only from ESPN. Yes, he had to go a little bit early to be on TV.
Oh, well, now I get it.
See?
Buster's, he's a busy guy.
Buster's the man.
He is the man, and he's making me feel even more excited about this whole situation with the Kansas City Royals.
The excite!
Cole Reagan's starting the All-Star game.
Chill, dude.
So we're getting a little ahead of ourselves.
Right.
But that's Buster saying that. Buster only.
Let me tell you, man. I mean, they got a full-fledged superstar in the making in Bobby Wood Jr. They have a stud at top of the rotation in Cole Reagans. It looks like they made two excellent signings with Waka and Lugo. Brady Singer has settled very nicely into his role as being a guy in the rotation, not the guy in the rotation. Now let Vinny get hot. 5 ribbies last night. Because when he gets hot and you go back and follow him when he was a double A and triple A, he goes on a tear for a couple of weeks. The kind of tear where he can carry a team. And this team don't need to be carried. But you just add him to the mix. Come on, Brady Singer. Go out there and, as Nate once said, put the hammer down on the Astros and get the sweep. Sweep Houston. Cheaters.
One, two, three, four.
Put the hammer down, baby.
Houston, you have a problem.
Oh, ho, ho!
That's right. Up next, we're going to talk to C.J. Moore. He has a problem, and it's us. Garrett Dieter and Anthony Sherman. Now that UConn defeated Alabama, Garrett Dieter has to wear a full baseball uniform and go out and cheer on Sherm's son in a Little League baseball game.
Oh, we all have to be there.
You gotta be cleats too, right?
Oh yeah, full uniform.
Everything.
Yeah.
I said I black, all of it, everything.
Oh, I'm going to live stream on the internet.
And then Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. May I invite you somewhere today?
Please.
That's unlike you. Usually you shun invites. Now you just said please.
You can invite me. Doesn't mean I'll be there.
Yeah, but it's not just me. It's a place where you're well-received and a place where people genuinely like you. And I'm talking about Tequila Harry's.
Oh.
Today, from 11 until 1, it will be fun. You've got two choices for the $8.10 lunch special. Either the Tijuana Tacos, which I have to take an order home for every person in my house. Or the lunch enchiladas. Enchiladas are delicious, but I got to go with the tacos. This $8.10. Also, specials on house margaritas all day long, $5. Wow. And don't forget, here's what you want to do. Whatever team it is, high school, college, pros, baseball, football, basketball, soccer, doesn't matter. Wear your team colors in, and you will receive a $10 gift card for future use. You can't use it right there, but you come back. You're going to want to come back because the food's so good. So you go in there wearing your favorite team's colors, you eat your food, and then as you leave, you get a $10 gift card to use the next time you come back at Tequila Harry's. Now, what the hell is wrong with that? Nothing. And I'll be there.
Yes, sir.
We'll give away some stuff. It's the southeast corner of College and Quivira.
Yes.
Tequila Harry's today from 11 to 1. If you don't have lunch plans, well, guess what you do now. How's that invite set with you?
I'll come by.
You got people to say hi to.
I'll come by.
Boddicker said he's going to be there.
I'll be there right when it starts. I'll hang out for 30, 45 minutes.
He likes to make himself unavailable because it increases his demand.
Does it?
You know?
I don't know about that.
What about you?
I'm planning on going out to the Sporting Kansas City media availability today in advance of this big match at Arrowhead Stadium over the weekend.
Is that sold out or not?
Get some sand. I'm not sure. I'm looking. You can get tickets as low as $135 in the upper deck as of last night. I haven't looked today.
Secondary market.
Yeah. Ticketmaster. That's where you have to go through Ticketmaster.
No, but I mean, is it sold? I have no idea. Like, how many have they sold? What's?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Get a soccer guy on the phone, with the police, so I can limit
myself.
We
need to get somebody who has some ties.
I mean, I do think that story, is it like, is it meeting the demand? Is it what they thought it was going to be? Is it, can you text someone from, I'm not.
It's looking good. It's looking like he's going to play in some form.
But I'm just genuinely curious.
Yeah.
What kind of crowd are they expecting out there?
Like I said,
butts in seats.
As of last night. Tickets $135 in the very upper deck in the end zone, like the cheapest. That's the cheapest one you could get. If you wanted to get them downstairs, it looked like it was still pay around $200 to $300 plus.
But all I want to know is, and I know the good people from Sporting listen to this show. I would just like to know what kind of crowd is expected.
Yeah,
I'm sure that there'll be people that buy tickets day of or whatever. But I'd just like to know is it what they thought? Because clearly they felt it necessary to move from their home park to Arrowhead for it.
The first response I've gotten, I just sent somebody a text, said, I believe there's still some club-level seats left.
So, you put a name on that?
No, I don't know if he wants his name quoted. And I said, what type of crowd is expected? And the response is, huge.
Well, yeah, huge. Yeah,
I mean, the biggest crowd they've ever had in the state of Missouri for a soccer game was when the Wizards played Man U.
Yeah.
We were all there.
Yeah.
In some form. And
I sat with Jake Yadrich.
Yeah. We were all kind of together, weren't
we?
Yeah. Yeah. I was screaming at the official in that game.
I think I fainted at one point.
But that was 50,000. This is going to break that record. There's going to be more than 50,000 people there. I think we do expect Messi. He played last night in this game in Monterrey, but they're...
How much did he play?
He played almost the whole game, if not the whole game.
Is that good or bad?
Well, it's good from the standpoint that he seems healthy. He didn't seem to get injured through the course of it.
I bet he'll come off the bench in this game.
Yeah, that might be the case. Since it's such a quick turnaround, they got beat pretty bad yesterday. So I turned the game off before it was over.
Like, I realize you work for MLS, and there's some things you feel uncomfortable talking about. I don't know why you won't tell me, give me information about this. Is like a big deal for Kansas City, and you will not tell me.
He's going to play.
What I'm asking you,
he's going to play. Is he going to start? I don't know that. I feel strongly that he's going to play.
Are the ticket sales meeting the expectations?
I've been told huge crowd, full house. They're expecting a full house.
Sellout.
They're expecting a sellout, yes. So, there you go. And that's why I want to go out there today.
That's all I want to know.
I know this much. My son's going to go. I got him tickets with his buddy Hakeem, who is a massive Lionel Messi fan. And Hakeem's mom told me, when I called him to say, hey, I want him to, he's a great kid, and I want him to go with my son.
It'd be weird if he was a terrible kid and you wanted him to go with your son.
You know,
really, really bad influence.
This kid is a terrible kid. Hey, would you like to go with my son?
Maybe this type of thing would turn him around.
Right.
You know, I don't know. She said, I'm going to remember this for the rest of my life. And this is one of the most exciting moments of my life. The people that are coming to see this are coming to see something that is a global phenomenon, you know, and it's going to be awesome.
That's why it surprises me that you won't talk about it or give me the information I asked for.
I'm trying to.
It's like
I wish I could be there, you know.
But you're not.
No, but my son's going to get to see Messi play, and he'll get to tell everybody that he knows for the rest of his life that he saw him
maybe
play.
Maybe get him on the show. Maybe
you see Betty
tell
come
me
on?
Something.
I feel like I'll get more information out of him.
Well, can you talk to him? Can you call somebody or something?
I told you. I'm texting somebody live
on
the show
right now.
You want
me to tell you said it? How do I know? How do I know that's not Lebo texting you or something? I mean, I don't know. I would take a break. I'm sorry, people. I'm digging for information. I'm trying.
I'm going to go out there today. That's why I can't be at Tequila Aries.
That doesn't help me now. All right? I'm curious, and you've not scratched my itch.
Did you see the graphic on one of the news stations yesterday that showed Inter-Miami versus the Kansas City Royals?
I'd take the Royals right now. Royals kick their ass.
I'll tell you, Messi's got a couple days to learn how to hit a curveball.
The Royals will beat their ass. I can promise you that. Back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's talk some college basketball with C.J. Moore from The Athletic. What's up, C.J.? How are you?
Morning, fellas.
Is Scott Drew going to be the new coach at Kentucky?
I think we might know today. I'm not sure Scott Drew knows that.
What do you think?
Man, I'm on the fence. I think maybe he goes. I don't know. I'd say it's about 50-50.
Hello, how's everybody doing?
Do you think it's so? Let's say it happens. Do you think that is how would you describe the hire of Kentucky? That's the hire they make.
Yeah, I think it'd be a pretty good hire. I think it's who the AD has always wanted since they became really close during the bubble when he was in charge of the. I believe he was in charge of the selection committee then, or in charge of the tournament then, basically. And, you know, Scott goes on the championship run, and they've talked regularly since then. So that's kind of where the relationship stems from. And, I mean, he won at Baylor, which was a terrible, terrible job when he got there. He can recruit. He builds pretty good staffs. You know, I think it'd be a pretty good hire. In fact, they've won it pretty consistently here recently.
So then if Scott Drew goes to Kentucky, then what kind of job is Baylor now, and would K-State fans have to worry about Jerome Tang going back?
I think it's a pretty good job now. The resources are pretty good. I'd say it's like a top, I don't know, maybe 20. I mean, Scott, in many ways, it's a really good job because Scott's been there, right? Like, so does that change? I don't know, but I think they'll continue to have the resources and they want to keep winning. My gut says their first call will be to Grant McCaslin at Texas Tech, who had also been an assistant for Scott and is a Baylor grad. So maybe K-State fans can breathe for a little bit until at least he says no, and then he might be the second call.
You think McCaslin would say no?
I don't know. I think it'd be tough for him, too. Texas Tech's a really, really good job, too, and they have great resources, a ton of money there, supporting NIL. I think he would have to – I think he'd seriously consider it because I mean, that's, you know, when it's your school and they're calling you, and that's where you went to school. I mean, Scott Drew didn't go to Baylor, but McCaslin did. I think it'd be tough for him to say no.
How in the hell did SMU start all this?
right. And they I tweeted that the other day. They started this, and I'm not sure they have a better coach. the guy they fired, he might be better than the dude they brought in.
So when you talked about the resources they have at Texas Tech, what kind of resources does Baylor have? I guess I'm kind of curious the landscape of like a smaller school, not as big of an enrollment, but probably some pretty rich alums. I don't know, like what type of investment can you have there for NIL?
Well, I think Scott's like, I believe he's a third, from what I've been told, I think he might be the third highest coach in college basketball. So they're paying him a ton. I think their NIL is pretty good. Probably up there, I'm sure, in the top third, maybe in the Big 12. So surprisingly, like, better than you'd think.
So, different topic. Coach Kyle going to Arkansas. What level of success do you think he will reach at Arkansas?
Man, I think it'll look pretty similar to how it's looked at Kentucky in terms of getting really high-level prospects. I don't know that he'll ever get back to a Final Four or anything like that. Like, a lot's going to depend on what his staff looks like the next few years. I believe he's just running it back with who he's had at Kentucky. So I don't know. I'm not sure anything really changes until, like, you know, maybe see some staff shakeouts and some guys to help him with X's and O's and that kind of stuff. I just think it'll look kind of similar to how it's looked at Kentucky. You know, maybe every once in a while they break through and go on a tournament run, but if he's just getting the best freshman every year, I mean, it's always going to depend on how good is that class. Like, some years you have Anthony Davis and it really doesn't matter what you're doing as a coach, like, you just break through. But you know, some years the class isn't quite as special. It's not all the same. Like, not every freshman class is equal.
The best exchange I've seen between a Kentucky fan and an Arkansas fan, as they argue on Twitter, was an Arkansas fan. They were arguing about what, you know, the programs, right? And Arkansas fan said, since 2020, two Sweet Six or a Sweet 16 and two Elite Eights, and since 2020, Kentucky, you know, zero. And then the Kentucky fan responded, "Yeah, guess where our coach has been since 2020." I thought that was funny.
Well, that was going to lead to my question, which is, a buddy of mine texted me this: which fan base is happier that Cal is at Arkansas now, the Kentucky fan base or the Arkansas fan base?
Oh, it's Kentucky for sure.
They really wanted him out of there.
Yeah, it's definitely Kentucky. Like, this is Cal did them a favor. I mean, they did not want to have to pay $33 million to get rid of him, but it might have gotten to that point at some point. So he did them a favor.
Jake, could you play this clip heard around the world? We only have a few more minutes with you, but we'd like you, this clip irritated Jake very much. We'd like you to respond to the words of Dan Hurley, please.
You know, UConn's been running for the last 25, 30 years. UConn's been running college basketball. And I see all the former champs over there. And we've been running college basketball the last 30 years. Let's go.
CJ, your thoughts.
Except for the years when we didn't make the NCAA tournament.
There's only eight of them.
But as someone pointed out, he didn't say it, but he was a guy that actually lives in that area as a Chiefs fan and listens to the show. He said, "You guys need to point out he was including women's basketball too." Well, I guess he assumes,
sure.
But you know, whatever. Yeah,
I guess so. They have been running women's basketball.
That's right.
I will say that. I mean, like, Connecticut's the weirdest history ever because, like, they've got a couple national titles when they just were not that good. But, I mean, they've had a very, very successful program, and he has it in a really, really great spot. But he was feeling himself. And, you know, granted, he just won his back-to-back national title, so... That's kind of Hurley.
Yeah, I mean, he had the microphone, so he could say whatever he wants. You know, he earned that stage. He can say whatever the hell he wants.
I mean,
even if it is wrong.
And UConn's women don't run college basketball on the women's side anymore. They did.
No, like, it hasn't been the last few years. But, I mean,
they're still really good. But South Carolina's the one that went undefeated. I mean, not them this time.
Oh, I mean, I would if you would have said we've been the best program in the last 25 or 30 years, I wouldn't argue with that.
What he said.
Yeah, but that's the language. Like you said, East Coast, you know. Got to be brash.
I probably would say the same thing.
I think CJ Moore runs college basketball. That's what I think.
Do you?
Yeah.
Is that something? Why don't you?
In my dreams.
I run college basketball. My column
for the next 30 years. Look out!
All right, CJ. Hey, CJ. Thanks for the time, man. We appreciate you as always.
Yeah, no problem. Take care, guys.
We have gotten so much mileage. I just thank Dan Hurley for saying it.
It gave us a lot to talk about after what was really a boring tournament.
Yeah.
You know?
Like I told you, I'm watching that. My wife's watching it. And I'm like, she goes, why are you mad? I go, because this game sucks. And I have to talk about it tomorrow. And I don't want to.
Yeah.
And so then we watched it. I said, well, so then why don't you go to bed? I said, well, let me see him get, you know, I like to see celebrations. And I go, I'm staying up for one shining moment.
Yeah, that's the killer.
And she goes, why? I said, you know what? I don't know. I don't know why. You know, the team I watch, the team isn't in it, but I like the song, and it makes me feel good. You know? It gives me all the feels. And so thankfully, because I waited up to watch One Shining Moment, I heard Danny Hurley declare that you kind of run college basketball, and then I got happy. She goes, why does that make you happy? I said, that just gave me my big talking point for the first hour tomorrow. Thank you.
Because I just needed a tool to wind up Jake and Nate,
yeah,
and here
I go. Give me something. I didn't do it. I didn't manufacture it. Danny Hurley was like, you know, hey, these people can't see, don't know what to talk about tomorrow. How about this? We've been running college basketball for the last 25, 30 years. Cha-ching. We'll take a break. Don't we all need a break? I tell you who needs a break, the Houston Astros. They got their ass kicked. Royals go for the sweep today in the afternoon as Brady Singer takes the mound. Trying to win 7 in a row, don't you know? Back into this. Well, you're going to say something.
I don't know.
Say something.
So when they do play One Shining Moment, this is the old version, right?
They play Luther Vandross.
Yeah.
So, I mean, nothing against Luther Vandross, but I like the old version, too. Yeah.
How's that?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm a David Barrett guy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, hey, if I wanted to Luther Vandross, I was put on some Luther Vandross.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I want to hear One Shining Moment of David Barrett because he was on this show and so tenderly talked to us about the process of him writing that song and recording it. And I gently asked him to sing a little bit of it. And he was...
The ball is tipped and there you are. Running for your life, you're a shooting star.
How's that?
It's wonderful. That's how it is.
How's that? I feel like he just rubbed my shoulders and... caressed me. There, how's that? He did. He caressed my soul with his voice.
Right.
Play it as we go to break. Back after this on WHB.
The ball is tipped and there you are. Running for your life, you're a shooting star.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. How about this? The musical Rocky, live on stage. The Music Theater, Kansas City, will be performing Rocky live on stage. If you're a Rocky fan, this is the Broadway musical in Kansas City. They have a beautiful theater and stage set up at the B&B Theater off of 435 in Midland. And it's going to be running from April 12th, tomorrow night, until April 28th. For more information and to buy tickets, you can go to mtkc.org. mtkc.org. And making special cameo appearances in Rocky live on stage will be Nate Bucati and I. Nate as play-by-play man Bob Dunphy, and I'll be playing color commentator and former heavyweight champ Jimmy Michaels. We'll be providing the play-by-play and commentary of the Rocky Apollo fight.
Good evening, fight fans.
So, if
this
you want,
is Bob Dunphy.
If you want to go see it and see us, obviously it's not towards the, you know, till the end. We appear during the Rocky and Apollo fight. MTKC.org for more information and to buy tickets to Rocky Live on stage. But I'm going to give away 4 tickets to Saturday night's performance at 7 o'clock. Saturday night's performance at 7 o'clock off 435 in Midland. Music Theater Kansas City, their performance of Rocky Live on stage. If you want to see Nate and I performing a musical, we don't sing, but we're there.
Oh, what if we were? That would have been great.
Caller 8-913-3810-810, 913-3810-810, and you get tickets, 4 tickets now on Sports Radio 810 WHP.